without much enthusiasm. It's God's will, whatever happens. The second large ship, the one to which our elevator was headed, was very different from the shuttle. At first glance it looked just like a random pile of floating junk which had somehow agreed to drift together. It looked barely capable of keeping itself in one piece while stationary, let alone moving. "I'm going down in that thing."
"The good ship Strelnikov," said the first mendicant. "Cheer up. It's a lot safer than it looks."
"Or is it a lot less safe than it looks?" asked the other one. "I always forget, brother."
"Me too. Why don't I check?"
He reached into his tunic for something. I don't know what I was expecting, but it wasn't the wooden kosh that he came out with. It looked to have been formed from the handle of a gardening tool, equipped with a leather strap at the narrow end, and a few interesting scratches and stains at the other. The other mendicant held me from behind, while his friend gave me a few bruises to be going away with, concentrating his efforts on my face. There wasn't much I could do about it. They had the advantage of me in zero gravity, and they were built more like wrestlers than monks. I don't think the one with the kosh actually broke anything, but when he was done my face felt like a large overripe fruit. I could hardly see out of one eye, and my mouth was swimming with blood and little chips of shattered enamel.
"What was all that about?"
I asked, my voice moronically slurred.
"A leaving present from Brother Alexei," said the first mendicant. "Nothing too serious, Mr. Mirabel. Just a reminder not to interfere in our business ever again."
I spat out a crimson sphere of blood, observing the way it retained its globular shape as it crossed from one side of the elevator to the other.
"You won't be getting a donation," I said.
They debated whether to rough me up some more, then decided that it would be best if I didn't run the risk of any neurological damage. Maybe they were a little scared of Sister Dusha. I tried to show some gratitude, but my heart just wasn't in it. I got a good close look at the Strelnikov as the elevator approached it, and the view hadn't got much better. The thing was roughly brick-shaped, about 200 meters from end to end. Dozens of control, habitation, and propulsion modules had been lashed together to make her, embedded in an intestinal explosion of snaking fuel lines and gizzard-like tanks. Here and there were what looked like the remains of hull plating, a few ragged-edged plates like the last traces of flesh on a maggot-ridden corpse. Parts of the ship appeared to have been glued back on, covered in cores of glistening epoxy. Other parts were still being welded back in place by repair teams, deep inside the ship's ill-defined surface. Gases were venting steadily from 6 or 7 places, but no one seemed particularly bothered by that. I told myself that the ship could have looked a lot worse and it still wouldn't have mattered. The route down to the glitter band, the conglomeration of habitats in low orbit around Yellowstone, was a typical workhorse run. There were a dozen similar operations around Sky's Edge. There was no need for any hefty acceleration at any point in the journey, which meant that, with modest maintenance, ships could ply the same routes for centuries on end, toiling up and down the gravity well until some final, fatal systems failure turned them into macabre pieces of drifting space sculpture. There were few essential overheads, so while such routes would always have a couple of prestigious operators running luxurious shuttles on high-burn trajectories, there would also be a series of steadily more ramshackle operations, each cutting more costs than the last. At the very bottom of the heap would be chemical rocket or ion-drive scows, making painfully slow transfers between different orbits, and while the slowboat I had been assigned wasn't quite that bad,